Blog Talk Radio.
Much Less Detail, the podcast. On a Thursday night, February 5th, 2015, I'm Dre. Jay, licking his wounds, should join me shortly. Hopefully it's not another night where he's having trouble getting in on the Skype. Because I need to gloat. I need to celebrate in his face. I need to be happy and talk all night long about my big come-from-behind victory, picking the Patriots over the Seahawks. I didn't come from behind necessarily to win the season, but it was the Patriots that came from behind and somehow beat the Seattle Seahawks despite being down 10 points in the fourth quarter. And Jason, I get to really brag this time because I am a triple crown winner now. I win the season picks. I win our fantasy league between me and you and your friends and relatives. I win the inaugural Buster League championship by a half a game over your mother. I am reveling in my glory, and I feel so great, and I'm trying to ignore the fact that Seattle should have won that fucking game on the goal line.
And that, excuse me, I'm fighting a horrible sore throat this week, so I'm a little hoarse, but it wasn't about yelling at the Super Bowl either. This has been ongoing, but yeah, that all of that and $1.50 gets you right on the bus.
Yeah,
you did not beat me in the March Madness though, so you didn't go for the Grand Slam, so to speak.
Yes, but the next one is upcoming, so I can.
The next one's up, right? So you're going for the Tiger Slam, I guess.
Yeah,
right. It's four in a row. It doesn't matter when they are, but you can get the four. No, it was. Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you know, I'm watching the game because I want to see a good Super Bowl, and I'm watching the game because there's intrigue between you and I. And I mean, for what it's absolutely worth, it's not worth anything for us.
Right.
I mean, other than bragging rights. And it was the most, I mean, when people say words like shocking and stunning, when that play happened and that Butler kid made that interception right at the goal line after Jermaine Kearse made the Antonio Freeman play where he's laying on the ground, kicking the ball up in the air. I'm sitting there on the couch with my wife watching the game and that's all going down with Jermaine Kearse. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, he caught that ball. Right, you know, right the first time. She's like, no. And I'm like, he caught that ball. Because the ref then comes casually walking in, starts waving the arm, marking him down. And I'm like, I bet she caught that. You know, and then they showed the replay, and I'm like, wow. Okay, you know, and they nailed it right away on the broadcast with, wow, are the Patriots going to lose three straight Super Bowls? With, you know, the helmet catch, and then you have the Mario Manningham catch on the sideline, and then are they going to lose with this? And I give, you know, and everybody wants to credit Butler for making the pick, but he was the guy who realized that Jermaine Kearse was laying on the ball at the one-yard line and ran over and tackled him right away. Otherwise, Kearse was going to get up and walk into the end zone.
That's right.
So he had to be Johnny on the spot twice. And while I do understand that they gave Tom Brady his MVP, how do you not give it to that kid making those two plays? Especially if you paid attention to this Butler kid during the interview afterwards. It was the most refreshing post-game interview. He thanked his coaching and broke down that play. Oh, I saw them line up in a stack, and we knew that they were going to run this play, and I knew if I ran to the spot and I jumped, you know. It was amazing because he did not thank God for making that play.
He was thanking God right after the play was over on the sideline. He had tears in his eyes and he couldn't stop pointing up to the heavens. And I don't think he was pointing at the defensive coordinator in the booth or anything. But you're right, at least he didn't sit there going on and on, praise God.
Yeah, I found it refreshing that it wasn't, you know, not that there's anything wrong with doing that, but it was actually a post-game interview that was more than just blubbering and tears. And, oh, I'm so blessed. Oh, thank you, Lord. Thank you, baby Jesus. I'm so blessed. It was actually like he's breaking it down right there for you, chalking it all up to the coaching. And he was absolutely right because he was there on the spot, recognized the formation, watched the game film, studied, knew where the guy was going to be. The read was hot. Obviously, if you're about to win the Super Bowl, the guy who you want making the play is Ricardo Laquette.
But yeah, it's all about preparation, right?
It's all about preparation, and at the critical moment, they screwed up, and the Patriots won two games because the Baltimore Ravens screwed up. When you felt they had the momentum to drive down the field, to chew up the clock, Flacco throws this just ridiculous interception into double coverage, and then you've got the Seahawks at the one-yard line, second down. It's not like that was fourth down. That was second down, and that was the only play they could spin up, and nobody was blaming Russell Wilson. That's a bad play call. I think you agree. I mean, we were texting back and forth a little bit after the game. Darrell Bevell, what are you thinking? How do you call that? How is that your best option?
It's the worst play call in the history of football, but I don't want to underestimate or understate how I feel about that. That's the worst fucking play call in the history of football. Yeah.
I was going through my mind trying to think in order of all the plays that they could have run that wasn't – I mean, what was that play call in the huddle? Was that like, you know, X wide, triple right, 60, soul-crushing pick on three?
Break,
yeah. I mean – you could call the timeout to get your goal line. I understand they didn't have the goal line package on the field, but get the goal line package on the field, and then you have all the options from that package to run. You can, if you obviously don't want to run it with Lynch, you could run play action off of that. You could have run a naked. You could run some kind of a bootleg. You could have very easily seen the Patriots sell out up the middle. Russell Wilson tucks it and runs off to the side, and nobody's there. Or you can even run play action out of that formation with the bootleg. It's just there were so many other things you could do than line up with all these wideouts and try to throw a hot slant into the end zone. Because even if it's not picked immediately, there's still the risk of it being tipped and picked.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible.
Is there any other running back in the league right now that would be able to survive not having the proper goal line package for your offense on the field and still get a fucking yard than Marshawn Lynch?
That's where I ended up where I was talking about how it was stunning because I'm sitting there and I'm just sitting with my wife. I'm like, oh yeah, this is Lynch twice into the end zone here. They had the mm-hmm. timeout. So they could have very easily have run that thing twice and still had time to spike it because it was 30 seconds, not 20. 20 was when the possession changed. There was about 30 seconds left. So they had the time to run the plays, especially and having that extra timeout still. There was enough time to run twice, and then if you just absolutely had to throw it into the end zone. And then I was wondering where, even if you're going to throw it, wouldn't you try to do like they did at the end of the first half and just isolate the corner on that Matthews kid who was having the first half of his life?
Yeah.
Out there. I mean, that's more of the play call if you're going to throw the ball that you want to see, where you're just throwing the ball where it's in a position that only one guy can make a play on it or it's going to be incomplete. But the feeling, it was just so stunning. When it happened, it did not feel real.
No kid. It did feel like a fantasy sequence was happening. Like, wait, did I just see what I
what
think
just
I
happened?
Saw?
Yeah, it was literally a what just happened kind of moment. Did that really happen? No. They didn't just throw that. No, that didn't get picked.
That
happened.
Further credit to Malcolm Butler then for not just being prepared and being in position to make the play, but for reacting on a play when you could totally understand a defender kind of relaxing, a cornerback kind of relaxing because he's thinking, I'm not really involved here. They're going to run Marshawn Lynch up the middle for a touchdown,
right,
and we're going to be behind. So he had to be alert enough to know, to notice, oh my God, Russell Wilson's dropping back. And then, oh my God, it's the guys coming right across where I am, and we've seen this on tape, and we prepared,
yeah,
and we know how to defend this, to run right through the guy's shoulder and take the football away. There's a lot of things, there's a lot of moving parts there going into that play for Malcolm Butler to make, and he gets so much credit for being in the right place at the right time for doing that. However, we cannot let Darrell Bevell and Russell Wilson off the hook. It was the worst play call in history of football, and it was a terrible throw by Russell Wilson. There was nothing good on the Seattle side for that play whatsoever. Nothing. The decision-making, the execution, just everything was just total shit for the Seahawks. They took a Super Bowl victory and pissed it away. A victory. It was right there.
Yeah, I believe the whatever statistical website or statistical analytics firm who calculates win percentages at that point had the Seahawks as an 88% chance to win right there. 88. That's very high. I would have maybe thought an even higher number. But you see plenty of teams get stout at the goal line, so it's possible, right? I mean, there's nothing
that
New England couldn't have stuffed Marshawn Lynch a couple of times, but all the momentum was going for the Seahawks at that point. It was you just felt like you knew this was going to happen. It was over.
Well, here's what was going through my mind as someone rooting like hell for the Patriots and watching this unfold, watching that unbelievable catch unfold by Curse, and the whole thing, you know, oh my God, they're going to go in, they're going to take the lead. All I'm thinking is whatever probability that Tom Brady can take 20 seconds here and find a way back down the field and tie the game with a field goal, if it's possible, I think this is the guy that can do it. But I don't know. It's not like he's got a huge rocket arm. I'm kind of talking myself into, yeah, Brady can do this. They're going to take the lead,
yeah,
but they left Tom Brady too much time. It's 20 seconds. He can get this done. He's the one. He's the man. He can get the – oh, my God, they threw it to the other team.
It's like you're almost waiting for them to let him score just because you know it'll only keep him
mm-hmm.
down by three, and you got to at least give your offense a chance because it's at the one-yard line.
Yeah, the announcers brought that up, but that
yeah.
was, of course, stupid because you have the lead. Just stop them. You know,
right?
All you have to do is stop them.
Yeah, but it was bizarre. No, with 20 seconds left and you need a field goal, there's really only one quarterback that you want to have, and you know who that is.
The man,
Matt Ryan.
The man.
Need a touchdown. Only if you need a field goal. He's your man.
The man has nothing but 25-yard out patterns in his head, and he throws it perfectly in the right spot every single time. And
flawless execution if you only have 25 seconds left on the clock and you got to go about 45 yards. That's like the only – he has perfected the game-ending interception. That's Russell Wilson. That's the game-ending field goal. Yeah, it was mind blowing. And I'm watching this as someone. Oh, yeah, I lost a picks title. Okay, I was losing to begin with. So at least we kept our streak going of the person in the lead winning. We've had a very good streak of some of not having the person just lose because of the other person just has to take the opposite. Although I wanted the Seahawks to begin with for good reason. They should have won the damn game. but I couldn't imagine being a Seahawks fan how that would have felt.
gut punch of all gut punches.
Having money on the Seahawks in that game.
Oh.
Now,
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. I mean, back in your gambling days, that's the kind of loss you would have been, had hung on you.
Yeah. I have thrown cordless phones and smashed them. I've thrown remote controls and smashed them by bad beats and back in my sporting betting days. This, I don't know. I may have thrown the TV itself. I don't know what I would have done. That's terrible.
I'm curious what the instances of domestic violence were in Seattle that night. Because there were some people were getting beat that night after that game. That was
okay,
rough.
I could go on for the entire hour on this point, but I just need to spit it out one time. It's obvious, but I still need to say it. It's a fucking yard, and your running back is Marshawn Lynch. It's a fucking yard,
3 feet,
and your running back is Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
Really? Really? That's your play call. That's why Darrell Bevell doesn't have a fucking head coaching job right there. I didn't know why. I had no idea. He's so well-established in the league, and I thought highly respected. Obviously I don't talk to other NFL personnel or anything like that, but I would assume he was highly respected. He's very accomplished in the game. He's always been thought of as a brilliant offensive mind. This shit right here, I mean, there's no explanation. There's no excuse for that. I don't know if he's ever getting a head coaching job now in the NFL based on that one play, because, again, it was the worst play call in the history of football. You can't hire that guy as your head coach and stand up in front of your fan base with your arm around him smiling and saying, this is the man to lead us into the future. The idiot that called a slant play on second and goal with Marshawn Lynch as his running back. This is the guy. You can't do that. I can't believe I'm saying that about someone so highly respected, but I think Darrell Bevell calls himself a head coaching gig ever and ever until the end of time. I don't think anyone can hire him for a head coaching job.
Well, and then Bevell shows his true class by throwing Ricardo Laquette under the bus a few days later in an interview saying he didn't fight hard enough to the football. How do you fight harder to the football when the other guy is standing right there waiting for it?
Your quarterback threw it right to the other team. How hard are you supposed to fight?
Fight harder. Fight harder through that guy who's just standing there waiting for the football.
How about give it to Marshawn Lynch and let him fight for a fucking yard? It's a yard! I'm angry like I lost the game. It's a yard! What are you doing?
Oh, I could not imagine if these roles were reversed and you had New England. Because that's the kind of loss you usually take.
Yeah, you know I would have opened up the show talking about how you have a horseshoe up your ass and how lucky you are. And yeah, so you can say it to me because it's completely legitimate and justified.
Well, no, I mean, they still won the game. I mean, granted, Seattle completely pissed it away. But could you know how you talk about taking the team that had the soul-crushing loss to go to do something next year? Was it just me or did every team in the NFC progressively take worse losses? Think about the progression. Detroit blew a big lead, right?
Yeah.
Dallas has the Dez Bryant play that's overturned. The Packers melt down in the last 2 minutes, and then the Seahawks lose the Super Bowl. And the last play. It's just like progressively worse losses from all four teams in the NFC.
Like, how do you manage to? Now, and it makes sense when you think about it. That's a good point out of you. Detroit, known for finding ways to fuck things up. Dallas, known for finding ways to fuck things up. Green Bay and your favorite coach, Mike McCarthy, finding a way to fuck something up.
I will say I at least had that one. I at least said my one cause for pause about the Packers not being able to beat the Seahawks was if McCarthy did something stupid and pulled some shit. Nothing to do with the guys on the field. Bad coaching. And they clearly just stopped playing because their offense play calling went into a shell. And then, the Seahawks. Wow.
Yeah.
That was going to be the beginning of the dynasty right there. You know.
Yeah. Two in a row. Two world titles in a row in the free agency era, in an era where it's so hard to keep your stars together,
yeah.
keep them in one piece. And Seattle had managed to limp their way with a hurt defense to the Super Bowl, took a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, and they were going to pull this game out. They were the better team for a good part of that game. I won't say 3/4 of it or anything like that.
I would say they were the better team from about midway through the second quarter until about midway through the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So about half the game, you know, a little less. So that it was really 50-50 because New England screwed up was not having a bigger lead, because when Seattle tied that right at halftime, in my mind, New England had outplayed them completely in the first half. So you had that sort of weird feeling like, oh boy, you know, the Seahawks, for as bad as they played, Russell Wilson didn't complete the first pass of his game until 5 minutes to go in the first half.
Right.
So you're at that point where you're thinking, wow, Seattle has been completely outplayed, and it's tied? Wow. You know,
it was reminiscent of the Packers game to me. Like, they're not the better team on the field, and yet they're going to find a way to pull this out. I have a bad feeling.
And then in the second half, you really started to feel the momentum and everything start to go Seattle's way. But your boy, your buddy, Therald Simon,
terrible.
Probably the play that lost the game for the Seahawks was Jeremy Lane breaking his arm.
Yeah, because that meant Daryl Simon had to take the field, and that's not good.
And even though your buddy, who you like to beat up on, Daryl Simon, was in the game, he had nothing to do with the Seahawks not running the ball from the 1 yard line. They were going to win the game, even with Therald Simon giving up the booty all game long.
Yeah,
they were still going to win that game.
But that's why they made the comeback. That's why the Patriots were able to make the comeback, at least partially, because Therald Simon was out there. Tom Brady, I don't think, has nearly as easy of a time leading that comeback in the fourth quarter, if not for Therald Simon. He's so clearly below all the other defensive backs for the Seahawks, it's not even funny.
Well, I'll tell you what, that route that Edelman ran on the touchdown, and the first time he ran it was a drop or a bad throw. But nobody could cover that. That route was perfect.
Yep, just make you shake your drawers, make you drop your underwear right at the goal line, and oh, there he goes.
Yeah, absolute. And then once again, though, that played to what Seattle does, is Seattle doesn't throw anything exotic at you. They line up, and that's it. We're going to play the same defense all game long, and we are going to beat you. And you're finding out that all these guys were hurt a lot worse than you realize, and that's even more a testament to them, and would be even more part of this sort of legend had they gone on to win the game, because Earl Thomas is going to have surgery, Cam Chancellor has fallen apart, Richard Sherman has the busted up arm. And even with all of that, they were still going to win that game. That would have just increased their standing. If they can bounce back and go on and do something next year, you know, that's fine. But this, you know, my question to you was, since you always like to take the team that had the crushing defeat to come out of a conference, you've got a whole range of them to pick from now.
No kidding. Take your pick out of the NFC. You had the more crushing potentially. The way I figure that is I kind of throw Detroit and Dallas away because I think overall as teams, they're not all that good. They may make it back to the playoffs again next year just because of the divisions that they play in. Detroit has Green Bay, but you know, the Bears and the Vikings, that's four wins right there. So they could make it back as a wild card easily. Dallas, of course, has a division filled with ne'er-do-wells and bustas and teams that aren't nearly as good as the media hypes them up to be. So they could make it back as well. Green Bay, I still would think, has the upper hand on as far as those four teams that suffered crushing losses. The reason is because, to me, they're the best team overall out of the four, even maybe even better than Seattle, because I still don't think Russell Wilson is all that good. I tweeted out, you know, when he was having that terrible beginning to the game, I was kind of talking shit to him and throwing shade about, you know, Russell Wilson, the elite quarterback, because he was looking anything but elite for the second game in a row. And, you know, I got to give him his props for leading the comeback. He made some very, very good throws as the game progressed. But when it first started, he looked like shit, and there's nobody that can say otherwise. There's no excuses. He actually looked nervous, which I thought he should look nervous coming off a 4-interception game. But he actually, you know, looked like the moment was a little too big for him. That man is not an elite quarterback. I'm sorry. They're going to pay him like one, and it's a mistake because he's not that good. So,
yeah,
for me, Green Bay is still the team that I would trust more next season.
It helps when you have the MVP.
Sure.
I mean, it helps when you have Aaron Rodgers. He wasn't my MVP, but, yeah, I'm not gonna take his MVP title away from him. You know, they're not going to come to me for consultation on that. So,
however,
yeah, no,
every
it helps
with
when you've got Rodgers playing.
You have your talent that surrounds you that makes you that much better, that makes you able to compete, because you put these receivers that Seattle has on Green Bay. I think we differ on this point. I don't think Aaron Rodgers would be nearly as good. Because these guys that Seattle throwing out there, who the fuck is Chris Matthews? Jermaine Kearse is nothing. Doug Baldwin is nothing. They tried to use Paul Richardson earlier in the year for a little bit, and he tore his ACL. They don't have Percy Harvin from last year's Super Bowl. They don't have Golden Tate from last year's Super Bowl. They really were trying to do this sort of with bubblegum and bailing wire like MacGyver on offense. You know, when you got Beast Bold, that helps you hold things together. But really, outside of that, need I remind you people, all of you that still think Russell Wilson is an elite quarterback, that offense was 27th in the league in passing this year. That's not an elite quarterback. I'm sorry. He's just not. And nothing's going to change
that. And all that said, they should have won the game.
They should have won the Super Bowl with a non-elite quarterback.
They should be two-time defending champions. Russell Wilson should have two Super Bowl victories in his first three seasons in the pros.
He should have been up there crying and thanking God and thanking his dead father and all of that. If you wanted God and all of that to be invoked, there that would have been right there for you, except he fucked up by throwing it to the other team.
At the one-yard line, which was consequently, just so you know, the first goal line interception of the season by anybody.
What a time.
Well, I mean, you hadn't had a first and goal or second and you had not had a team at the goal line all year throw a pick, and you just end the Super Bowl with it. Just shows you how hard that is to do, to have somebody. It just doesn't happen. It had happened zero times all year, and there are teams setting up shop at the one-yard line all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like it was the first time out of 10 plays. I mean,
it's absolutely mind-boggling. That play call, it will live in infamy. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have a new picture on the front of our website. Scott Norwood's off the hook.
This is worse than Scott Norwood's wide right? Well, it is the worst play call ever, so yeah, I guess it is.
It wasn't like Scott Norwood was kicking a 25-yard field goal. It was a 47-yard field goal.
That's true.
This was second and goal at the one-yard line with a top five running back in the league, where the odds say you are a 7-in-8 chance away from winning the Super Bowl, and you dial up
that.
A hot slant that just gets jumped and picked. The only thing that would have been better if it was a pick six. You know, and the spread was 10.
Oh.
So they could have won by 11. That's the only thing that would have made it better.
Well, I'll agree to change the pictures on the blog and on the on the website. You'll have to remind me of that, but yeah, that's an all-timer. That is absolutely an all-timer.
I cannot think of a Super Bowl, you know, and we haven't seen 50 of them, but I'm aware of all of them where this level of just soul-crushing defeat happened. And the closest thing I can think of was, you know, back to that first season of ours of doing this, which was Wide Right.
Oh, yeah, Norwood made a name for himself for not the way he ever planned to do it, but he's absolutely a very famous man and a very famous name for that miss.
Yeah. And, you know, sadly, the Bills went on to lose 4 in a row. That was their first one. You know, at least Seattle can hang their hats on the fact that they at least they were there to win another one. they were just prevented from being back-to-back winners. So it's not like this was their one chance, and now they're just going to fade off into obscurity. That's still a good team.
It is.
We'll see if there's any hangover effects going into next season. But you gotta think that for them and for Green Bay, I agree with you about those two. And you know, but you gotta imagine if you're the Packers or the Seahawks. You know, and you could say this for every team, but for those two, there is no acceptable outcome next year other than you go back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they'll be revved up for it and ready to go as far as they can. And Seattle, of course, is equipped as much as any team because of that defense. Now we have to see how many of those guys come back healthy and able to perform at that level again.
But I
just think Green Bay is going to be ready and ready to go full bore. I don't think there's going to be anything holding them back next year.
No, because this year they were sluggish to start. I think they were doing the victory lap for the first 6-8 weeks. And then they really started to look good, Seattle did.
Right.
Did you see the Rob Lowe meme on the internet?
No, I didn't, but I can only imagine what that is.
Oh,
I think you know what? I think I have that. I'm, you know,
yeah,
dumbass.
Yeah, it's a picture of Rob Lowe, and it says I'm Rob Lowe, and I have DirecTV, and then it's a picture of Rob Lowe wearing Seahawks gear.
Right.
And it says, "I'm incredibly stupid, Rob Lowe. I have the best running back in the league, and I throw the ball from the 1 yard line and lose the Super Bowl, and I have cable."
Mm-hmm. I did see that.
It was classic.
I saw the one about the nationwide kid where he says, "I would have ran Marshawn Lynch on a one, but I died." I saw that one. There's probably a million others that were very good that I haven't seen, but I do remember those two.
And you know, and usually with a Super Bowl, you want to talk about all the things and the ebb and the flow, but really this game, that was it.
That was it. You say what's never happened in the Super Bowl. There's never been a finish like that. There's never been, I'm going to venture to guess, there's never been a Super Bowl losing coach being interviewed on the Today Show 2 days later. That's how monumental this blunder was. What's the Cubs history, the 1930s player, whatever, Merkel's boner? Or that might not be a Cub thing. I think it is, though. But there's a player named, I think it was Fred Merkel, that made such a stupid play that they named it Merkel's boner, and 100 years
sure.
later it still lives in infamy. This is something like that. This is Pete Carroll's boner or Daryl Bevel's boner, whoever
yeah.
is going to wind up getting the credit or the blame as history
yeah.
goes on. This is that big.
Yeah, I'm trying to think through all of sports. What has ever happened at the end of a championship game? You know, this wasn't, you know, people are going to remember all the bonehead plays like Buckner, you know, but that was
yeah.
game six.
Yep.
You know, or Bartman. We talked about Bartman and that whole melt up. Nope. Cubs. Sorry. That was game six. You know,
somebody came up with it on Twitter or Facebook. I don't remember who did it, but and I was watching this game. This is like when we were so young, we were just starting to watch sports and basketball and stuff. But do you remember the 1982 NCAA tournament finals? I don't know who North Carolina was. Oh, it was North Carolina Georgetown. And
yeah.
Georgetown had a player named Freddie Brown who had the ball. And with the time running down, it was the last seconds. And I think Georgetown was down one. I think this is so long ago, they didn't even have a three-point line. So they were just passing the ball around outside just trying to set up the last dump inside to Patrick Ewing to make the final shot. And I believe they trapped Freddie Brown, and he got so nervous that he turned and threw the ball directly to James Worthy of North Carolina, who was standing there with nobody around him. It was just, he threw it to James Worthy as if he was a teammate of his, and I watched that live. I remember watching that. That's about what this was. That's about as bad as it was. He threw it. Russell Wilson threw it right to the other team. At least he had a teammate in the area, but it was about that level. That's about the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, and it's funny because we always joke about this, you know. And I hate to use this analogy, so I'll put a little humor into this now, and I'll just say the one player in sports, even though this is loosely a sport, that this reminded me of, Del Ballard Jr.
Ow, you beat me. I was gonna. Yeah, are you gonna guess that? Are you gonna talk about that bowler that threw a gutter ball with a title on the line?
Yeah, the guy with the title on the line needed 7 pins. Any bowler can get 7 pins. All you got to do is just hit the head pin. Even if you get a split, you're going to get 7 pins. And he lets that thing go, and all of a sudden that thing just rides the gutter and then falls in, and all you hear is... and then it slams into the back wall. And it's just... And that's it. It's over. I remember because, I don't know, I think I was on the phone with you. I think we watched that live.
I think we did. We were bored on a Saturday morning or something, yeah.
Yeah, it was sad. You know, it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. It's when bowling was always on. And I hate to say it, but this was the thing that keeps popping into my mind. This was the football equivalent of the Del Ballard Jr. moment. For people who don't know what we're talking about, I'm sure it's on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm glad you remember the name so people can go Google that.
Yeah, just type in Del Ballard Jr. I remember it because it was one of those... Yeah, we were doing our ECW last week. You know, you should have had a whole stadium of it. You fucked up. I hope they have a rally in Seattle and they give, you know, and they get those guys and give them that chant because, wow.
Yeah.
What a way to end our season. You know, I mean, what a way for we were pretty razor close, razor thin margins this year. All year, and it literally came down to the last 20 seconds of the Super Bowl before one of us knew which one was going to win, and it kept going back and forth as to who we thought it was going to be, you know? I went from thinking when Brady threw that last touchdown, oh, that's it.
Yep.
It's over. And then all of a sudden, Seattle just bang, 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 right down there to the goal line. I'm like, oh, I'm back in. I got this thing. I'm going to win. And then taken right away, even though Seattle never actually had that lead at the end to be taken away, you just knew it was over.
Well, they did have the lead because it was one fucking yard and your running back is Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
It could have been, I don't care who the running back
is. It could have been Robert Turbin. They could have had a trade for Trent Richardson. He would have tripped into the end zone.
Well, I don't know about that.
All you gotta do is get behind somebody and fall forward.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is it's 1 yard. There's no circumstance if I'm coaching a team, if I have 1 yard to the goal line, 1 yard to victory, then I'm not running my running back over either my best offensive lineman or against the weakness of the worst defensive lineman. Whatever the math is, whatever the situation may be, you figure out your best chance to get 1 fucking yard, and that's how you go about it. And any coach that doesn't have enough confidence in his team to do that, it's just the worst mistake you can make. You cannot do that.
Yeah, go back
and watch. I understand Pete Carroll's a genius, but you can't do that.
You can also out-genius yourself, and I think that's what they did. They got cute.
They got way too cute.
We always talk about, especially when we make our picks, we always talk about getting cute. You know, a team is a 1.5-point, you know, favorite, but we take the underdog to lose but still cover because it's a 1-point. And, you know, that's what they did. They tried to get cute. Go back and watch the anything that you can see about the Ice Bowl. You know, where it's the end of the game, and you know it's like one of the coldest games in NFL history, and you've got Bart Starr from the Packers coming over to the sideline talking to Lombardi, and the linemen for the Packers are telling Starr, "Hey, we've identified the weak guy in the Cowboys line. Let's attack that, right?"
Yeah.
And it's the end of the game. There's no timeouts. It's like 17 seconds left, and they run the ball right at the weak link of the Cowboys' defense. And even Bart Starr on ice fell into the end zone. You've got turf and one of the best running backs in the league, and all you need to do is, who's the guy on that defensive line who can't block? Everybody go hit him. And let's get 3 feet, you know, and like Vince Lombardi said, let's get the hell out of here. You know, that was
three feet
to go. Get the hell out of town with your Super Bowl win.
But they couldn't do that. So what else about the game stood out to you, or what else do you remember?
You know, usually I comment on the halftime show, but I only caught portions of it. I saw Katy Perry on a giant statue, tiger or lion or whatever it was, and then my daughter wanted to watch TV, so then I went back to it, and Katy Perry was flying around in the air with sparks coming out of her ass. And I was like, yeah. Maybe I'm just old, but this isn't doing it for me.
I did watch the whole thing. I liked it. You know, I didn't love it because, you know, Katy Perry's music isn't necessarily my bag. But I liked it. She shocked me by the you're aware of that she made a song years ago called "I Kissed a Girl."
Yeah.
That I think that might have even been her first hit single. I was stunned that she actually sang that song. If I was making bets on if she would perform that song or not because of how the NFL is, you know, how skittish they are about their halftimes ever since the Janet Jackson thing, I would have said that they would have put the kibosh on that song specifically, and she wouldn't have performed it, but she actually performed it. It was they advertised Lenny Kravitz as her. Now, this is the strangest part of it for me. They advertised Lenny Kravitz as her special guest because every Super Bowl act, unless you're Bruce Springsteen and you want to dominate the stage, every act has some sort of special guest star or guest musician. They advertised Lenny Kravitz as the special guest, and he came out, and that's the only song that he did. He did "I Kissed a Girl" with Katy Perry, and then he left. And then later on in the performance, surprise guest act, the rapper Misdemeanor Elliott, Missy Elliott, comes out. Missy did three songs her damn self. Missy did three of her own songs and then left. And Missy looked, you know, great. She's lost a ton of weight and she rocked the house. But if you're going to advertise one guy as your special guest, shouldn't he be on more songs than your surprise guest? That was a little odd to me.
It was a swerve.
It was. Vince Russo was booking the Super Bowl halftime show, but other than that, it was somewhat unremarkable. You didn't really miss all that much. It looked expensive. I'll say that. All the special effects and the statue of the lion that she was riding on, the robot lion, and all of this other stuff. Half of the effects. My wife and I are looking at each other like, is that CGI or is that actually happening? Because it was very visually stunning, I suppose.
Yeah. Agree with you because that part I saw at the beginning was, that was impressive. I got the impression that she was doing her own singing, which is always commendable.
It didn't
look like lip syncing. It didn't look like lip syncing. It looked real.
It looked like she was singing for real at times, and other times it looked like she was lip syncing. But
oh, okay. Well, you know, it could have been a little mix in there.
Yeah,
she looked like she was singing, standing on top of a 40-foot lion. That's commendable. I probably would have not been able to do that.
Yeah, that was commendable as far as I'm concerned, because at the end of whatever that song was, it was the roar, right? You're going to hear it.
I guess so, sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. At the end of it, she like rears back on the lion and lets that last line belt out. And I'm thinking to myself, I hope her feet are strapped into whatever that thing is, because I was afraid
she
was going to tumble.
Yeah, she was bolted onto that thing pretty good. It looked like she was in a harness of some kind.
Okay.
So, otherwise, yeah, that would have been, because that's what I'm waiting for. I'm like, oh my God, she's going to go, like, was it Bret Hart?
No. It was always
the guy who bounced
brother.
Off his head. Oh, okay, yeah. That's what I'm waiting for. It's sad to think that that's what I'm thinking about, that I'm about to watch Katy Perry fall and die at the Super Bowl. Well, I'm sure they rehearsed that and it was safe, but that was Owen Hart?
Yep.
Okay,
I was right
yeah,
along with you, though, when at the end of the thing, when she's on the star flying around, and I'm thinking, uh-oh.
I was like, what is this? I
hope there's not a wrestling ring under her. But thankfully, everything turned out okay.
You're gonna need Joy Styles. Oh my God,
she's dead. Yeah.
But no, alas, she survived. I
mean, I'm trying to remember who did the. John Legend did the America the Beautiful or what have you. That was fine.
I didn't catch any of the pregame. Didn't catch the anthem. None of that.
Idina Menzel took way
Adele,
too much
Adele
time.
Azeem.
Yes.
Azeem.
Took way too much time doing the anthem. Here's how much I keep up with the Hollywood scene. She was married for like 10 years to Taye Diggs. I didn't know. I think they just got divorced or separated.
Oh.
I had no idea.
It was over before you even...
Yeah, exactly. And my wife tells me that before she starts to sing, and then she goes on caterwauling so long that I had to tweet out. I tweeted out, she's been doing black so long, she thinks she is black with all this singing and going on with all these notes. And like, sing the damn song.
You just yodeled on radio.
That's what she sounded like. She sounded like she was yodeling.
I'm sure. I'm going to have to YouTube that.
She just took so many liberties with the lines and putting all these little accents on it and took
whatever the over-under was, the
time of her singing, and she went way
over. Vocal acrobatics, that's nothing exciting.
Yeah, she thinks she's Aretha, and she's not.
That's right. We need Wayne Messmer out there. That's what we need.
Or the opera guy that does the Hawks games now.
Yeah, just belt that thing out.
Yeah. No problem with that.
It's the song of our country. It's not R&B or, it doesn't need all the flourishes and all that stuff. It's the Star Spangled Banner, really.
Yeah, just and she fooled me, too. She did it, I believe she did it a cappella. So when she starts out, I'm thinking this is going to be, good because she doesn't have all the musical accompaniments, and usually that when you really get a flourishing and when you get the music built, because you're going back to Easton doing the Spangled Banner at the Super Bowl right after the Persian War started, that whole thing was recorded, pre-recorded, and you had all the flourishes built in with the music and the orchestra and all that, and that was such a masterpiece, quote unquote, that they actually sold that as a single. Back in the day, if you remember.
That was a big deal. Now, was that not Wide Right? Was that Super Bowl?
Ooh, let's see, 91. It might have been
January 91. That may have been Wide Right.
I think you're right. I believe you're correct about that. And speaking of Whitney, of course, I had to tweet something about when I found out her daughter was. Trying to take the same path out off of this earth that her mother took. I'm like, we all have our weird family traditions. I don't like that family tradition of taking drugs or booze or some combination and going face down in your bathtub. That's too drowny. I don't like that family tradition. They can change that tradition anytime they want. I'm not cool with that.
That's just one of those bizarre stories. That's like Bruce Lee and his kid, they're both getting killed on a set of movies. It's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
very
let's not follow through with that.
And then as far as the game goes, from the notes that I took. The very first note was actually about Richard Sherman looking like he couldn't extend his arm and make an early tackle. So I thought they were in trouble right off the bat there. And New England wasn't even trying anything deep or even medium because they were just running. It seemed like they were running as many plays as possible.
Brady has no deep game left, and which was even more stunning that Seattle, you know, it's all they've perfected this offense of this just dink and dunk, nothing more than about 8 yards, and let the receivers make plays, and that's where Seattle really clamped down in the second half. Was they were still doing those plays, the Patriots were, but Seattle was just up on them and tackling them right away. They weren't letting them get away.
Yep.
But the New England's offense is so boring. And they couldn't run the ball, damn.
Nope. No, LeGarrette Blount was not very effective. But that score was 0-0 for the longest time because New England was dominating the ball, dominating time of possession, running as many plays as possible. And then after a very long, careful drive, Brady just throws an INT in the end zone right to Jeremy Lane, the play
ugly,
where he broke his wrist.
Just an ugly pick.
Right to him. Just here you go.
Like he closed his eyes and threw it.
Mm-hmm. The Rex Grossman special.
It was one of the first times that Seattle had them in a long situation. And
third down pressure, yeah.
And the first time Brady gets a rush,
it's pretty much what happened. But Russell Wilson came back looking nervous throwing, and he was scrambling forever before every throw. Coming off a 4-INT game, like I said, he looked like he was still thinking about those picks in his mind, like he was afraid to pull the trigger on anything. And then Brady started making big boy throws into very tight windows, and I started feeling better about my pick. Leading up to the Brandon LaFell touchdown, the sweet slant pass between two DBs to make it 7-0. And I thought that might have been the beginning of it because Seattle goes 3-and-out immediately. Wilson's still not getting any rhythm going. He was going deep. He started to go deep at this point because nothing was working, shorter or medium. So at that point, he was starting to sort of air it out, and he hadn't found Chris Matthews yet. But you could just tell he was about to get it cranked up and let it loose because nothing else was really working for him.
And that's a lot of Russell Wilson's game. He does throw a very nice deep ball,
mm-hmm.
Very catchable ball. Puts a lot of air under it. It really does a good job of like hitting the guys in stride, and once a few of those deep balls started getting caught, all you got to do is hit a couple of those, and all of a sudden that defense stretches a little bit, and everything starts to open up, and the running game started to open up, and everything was just it was like they kept talking about it on the game, and it was true because I even felt that it was like a heavyweight fight. You really felt like it was just each team just kind of coming out. They weren't slugging each other. They were just kind of feeling each other out. You see a lot of Super Bowls that way where there's not a lot of scoring early. Tons of scoring late. Like that New England-Carolina Super Bowl.
Right.
Scoreless for a long time. Low scoring first half. Just boring game. Terrible game. I think he ended up with a 32-29 final.
Right.
Some ridiculous number. Another Super Bowl that ended with the bonehead, with the guy, was it John Casey kicking the ball out of bounds on the kickoff?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. That's another one of my favorite boneheaded Super Bowl moves.
New England needs a field goal to win, so let's kick the ball out of bounds and let him set up at the 40. Oh, boy.
Yeah, let's give it to him at the 40.
And no wonder that Vinatieri got a lot of help in making it to the Hall of Fame as a kicker, because the Rams gave him a lot of help, the Panthers gave him a lot of help. In this game, I actually was feeling good because once Brady started making those big boy throws and getting himself worked into his game plan, and Wilson still wasn't getting into his, I thought if New England's defense holds up, it was going to be Patriots all day at that point. Then Chris Matthews surfaces, out of nowhere, never had an NFL catch in his fucking life, and Wilson hits him deep on a play fake. That's what set up the beast mode run to make it 7-7, and everyone around the world made their Chris Matthews hardball jokes, and that all started on Twitter. Gronk got deep on the right side, being covered by a linebacker, K.J. Wright, for an easy 22-yard touchdown before the half, and I felt great again about New England because that showed me that they're going to take advantage of what Seattle was going to give them. That is, you should never let Gronk get outside like that with a linebacker covering him. If he goes outside, he needs to have Richard Sherman or Jeremy Lane or some other cornerback covering him because the linebacker is not going to be able to keep up.
Chancellor was actually covering him okay on the few times they tried that matchup.
Yeah, but that's only because he's so damn physical and fast.
Yeah.
He can actually keep up.
Yeah, but Cam Chancellor is a big
KJ,
boy.
Right.
He's out there playing with the big boy pants on. You
right.
cannot put a linebacker on Rob Gronkowski.
No. And I don't know how Seattle gets it together so quickly and puts together a drive in about 30 seconds before the first half ends. Great mix of run and pass. They kind of surprised me, actually. This is going to be completely forgotten in history, but they have the ball at the New England 11 with 6 seconds left before the half,
yeah.
and they actually go for the touchdown, which is very dangerous because if something happens, Russell Wilson gets sacked or something like that,
yeah.
and the clock runs out, you know, that's the end of the first half, and you just ruined a completely good scoring opportunity, except Chris Matthews. Logan Ryan played so far off, it was just stupid. I don't know where he thought Chris Matthews was going, but there he is 6 yards away, and Logan Ryan is just way back in the back of the end zone, like, go ahead, step in front of me and catch the ball, no problem. And that's what tied it up at the half.
Yeah, just ask Kurt Warner and James Harrison how well that goes at the half.
Ooh. All
little
the way back the other way.
Yeah. And that was halftime. If he did not get into the end zone, it was it. It was halftime.
So nothing else working for Seattle's passing game except for Chris Matthews. But you talk about unsung heroes. He was possibly in line for an MVP if Seattle held on. Seattle was trying like hell to get to Tom Brady in the second half. Weren't able to do it. And Brady tried to actually force it to Gronk. Where Bobby Wagner jumped underneath for an interception, and that's what led to a play action to Doug Baldwin wide open and gave Seattle that 10-point lead. It's 24-14, and now I'm getting a little depressed. But at that point, things turn around. Michael Bennett was not being blocked at all, turned the ball over again after the Patriots go out because Michael Bennett was being held. They did set him back and gave him the penalty, moved the Patriots back. Turned the ball back over to Seattle. Huge chunk pass to Jermaine Kearse right through his hands. And
yep.
that might have been a break that New England needed. However, Ninkovich gets a sack, gets it back for the Pats. Thurald Simon starts doing what he does and letting Julian Edelman just get open all over the field, big catches in traffic. He probably got concussed and wasn't taken out of the game. And that allows New England to start their comeback. Edelman Brady missed a wide-open Edelman in the end zone. Andy Amendola, however, on the next play was there. That's 24-21. Seattle had a play where Beast Mode was on a passing route, didn't finish his route, and Wilson threw it over its head for a three and out. Your boy Ricardo Lockett may have been tripped up, but Brady still doing what he does. He was at his best at that point. You could really see him getting into a rhythm. And you get Edelman on that pivot play that we talked about. He may have pushed off. We won't talk about that.
Didn't look that way to me, though. I mean, that was not – I mean, if it was, it was – I mean, it's not anything that's going to get called. It was ever so slight. But,
right.
Hey, it looks like we're heading into the after show.
We sure are. If you want to join us on the after show, subscribe to In Much Less Detail, the podcast on iTunes, and we will see you on the other side of the music. All right, and now into our after show portion of the program. That basically took us right to the last drive in that huge sequence with the beast mode catch on that same slant and go route that they missed before, which set up the total miracle catch by Jermaine Kearse at the 10, which set up Beast taking it to the 1 yard line on a run the very next play. And then for some reason, the next play, they decide not to run him again, throw, and Malcolm Butler takes it away, and that's basically the end of the game. That and the silly little brawling at the end as well.
Oh, yeah, we didn't really talk about that. That was fun.
No. Yeah. I mean, obviously the Seahawks were frustrated and couldn't believe that, because there was a sequence, actually, Malcolm Butler brings that ball out to the 1 yard line. He didn't know if he had caught it outside the goal line or inside, so he decided to try to run it and got tackled at the one. So now it's not a situation where Tom Brady can take a knee and end it because he's in the end zone. They're going to have to possibly quarterback sneak it, but Michael Bennett, again, being a little too eager, jumps offside. They move the ball out to the 6, and now it's over because it's 20 seconds left and Seattle only has one timeout. So now you take the knee and end it, except upon taking the knee, frustrations boiled over, fisticuffs started swinging, and I saw Gronkowski throwing at least one haymaker in there.
Yeah.
Seattle defenders throwing punches, and after all that, eventually, was it Cliff Avril that got ejected?
Yeah. And you've got that Seattle defense out there. Those guys are thinking, we won the game.
Uh-huh.
And now we're watching them take a knee. Oh, yeah, I mean, I can imagine what it would have been like being on that team and having that game won and having to go out there and line up and it's over. I mean, and this is the end of the season. So the guys were fighting and there were some punches at all. I'm glad nothing more was made of that. I'm glad it didn't turn into this big huge thing. Because it was a bunch of guys that had a lot of frustration boiling over.
I think that play call was so huge and so all-consuming that's why there wasn't more made of that, because that was a pretty big deal that, you know, get a Super Bowl ending with the haymakers being thrown like that. It's pretty shocking. But that play call just overcame everything. It's still going. Wednesday, Thursday, after the Super Bowl, that's still overshadowing everything about the Super Bowl. Is that one play call. It's unbelievable what that call meant to the season. Like you said, the Seahawks legacy, the potential dynasty that they were building, everything changed on that one fateful play call. And who knows, the Seahawks may never be the same for it.
It's going to be replayed forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's going
to start off the next season. That's all they're going to talk about at the beginning of next year. And when we left off, here's what was going on.
And it doesn't even make it the best Super Bowl. I mean, I think I've seen more exciting games in the Super Bowl. Because I got to say, a lot of the game to me felt kind of dull.
Yeah,
maybe it was just that slow. I was not all that impressed with Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, because it didn't feel like they were calling a Super Bowl. It just felt like they were calling a Sunday night football game. it didn't feel big to me until the end.
Right.
But
to me, there's something to be said for that, because your alternatives out there are that it could have been on Fox.
Oh,
it could have been Chip Carey not Chip Carey.
No,
Joe
Buck. Joe
Buck.
I'd hate to have had Joe Buck call that at the end.
He would have had something to say about the Doug Baldwin touchdown celebration where he was pooping the ball out. He would talk about how disgusting that was, and you know, our audience didn't see that, and thank God, because it was the worst thing that society has ever witnessed. The entire stadium turned to stone when it happened, because that's how terrible it was. And then the last play,
that
yeah.
He was celebration? He pooped out the ball?
Yeah, they didn't show it.
Because I know he got flagged.
Right. My wife and I are both wondering why he got flagged, and I completely bullshitted her and told her that it was because he spun the ball in celebration. And she immediately called me on it and said, wait, didn't Gronkowski on the touchdown spike, do this huge spike so you
yeah,
can spin it, but you can't
spike
it? And I said, yeah. Yeah, he got flagged for spinning it. Yeah, that was it. It's because I didn't know that he did that with it, and that's what he actually got flagged for, because they didn't show it on NBC.
Who comes up with that celebration?
I have no idea.
Pooped out the football.
And when asked about it after the game, he responded, that's between me and the guy it was intended for. So this was some sort of personal thing that he decided to hurt
in
his
the
team
Super Bowl.
By penalizing them by doing that in the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So it could have.
I hope he made his point.
Apparently he did. So it could have been Joe Buck and Troy Aikman trying to make sense of that. I'm sure they would have been more excited than Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels, but that doesn't mean they would have been better.
Or it could have been Jim Nance and Phil Sims. Oh, man. Yeah, there's just not a good A team, is there?
No.
When you think about your you know, Yeah, we need a
Michaels
better A
team. Michaels and Collinsworth are the best by a pretty big margin, but even they're not, you know, all that. But I'd much rather have them than the other two.
Okay, I'll have to agree with you on that. But it just felt so dull. The game to me was just boring.
Yeah, it was one of those, like we said, when teams start off sort of feeling each other out and trying to figure out, all right, how we're going to do this and let's try this, and they're a little nervous and, you know, they see a lane or a throw that they probably should make, but they don't pull the trigger immediately. That's what Russell Wilson looked like to me early, is that he had some throws that were there and he just held the ball and scrambled and held the ball because he was afraid to pull the trigger. And I think that definitely contributes to a boring game, is when you have a quarterback taking forever to throw, and then he finally throws and it's incomplete and it's another punt. So that's what that game looked like early.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it where I think everybody, as far as like football fans, end up feeling a little bit gypped, was you did not get anywhere close to that wasn't even an 80% strength Seattle defense with all the bang ups that they had in that defense, and for them to still go out there and play ball the way they did. I mean, yeah, they gave up 27 points, but or 28, but you know, if they even have a little bit more health,
yeah, that's the question we'll never have answered.
Yeah, because that was one, and after the game, you found out just how hurt those guys were.
I mean, on the other hand, I look at how staggered Julian Edelman was halfway through the fourth quarter. That motherfucker shouldn't have been out there. He was clearly concussed, as far as I'm concerned. And he stayed there, and he made big plays, and he kept, you know, grinding his way through. He probably doesn't know his name this morning, but so that was just as big on the New England side, as they had a guy that was very key for them that probably shouldn't have been out there. Was I imagining that? Did I make that up? Did he look like he was staggering around to you?
Who hit him? Somebody really clocked him.
Yeah, somebody rang his bell.
And, yeah, I mean, somebody really gave him a pop. And, you know, on one of those plays when he was going over the middle, they even made it a point. Was it Chancellor?
Probably.
That's the guy. If you're going to get, you know, jacked up in the secondary by the Seahawks and not have a flag thrown, it's by Cam Chancellor, who's the like, cleanest hard hitter I think we have, because you see the hits, and then you go back, and when you re-look at them, they're all clean.
They are.
They're
there's
just
like
vicious.
There's a quarter-sized target area on the side of the body of every receiver that you can hit without getting a flag, and he hits it every time.
Yeah, he just lights these guys up.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing. So, but, yeah, he one of those shots, he got up and looked like he was 1 second away from collapsing, because that's how staggered he looked, and stayed in the game, and made more catches.
And just to show you this news cycle for football now, we're 4 days off the Super Bowl now, and they're already talking about the draft.
Yeah, I was paying attention to all the football news that isn't concerning that play call in the last 4 days.
Yeah.
And it's a steady rhythm now. It's moving on to the draft, and it's also starting to round up the guys that get arrested because it's NFL football season and they got to start getting arrested. That's just what they do. Your guy up there in Green Bay, LaTroy Guyon,
yeah.
$200,000 in cash and all this drugs and stuff on him. It's the NFL offseason. It's like unbelievable. Every year when the NFL season ends, guys just start running out and getting arrested because that's just what they do. And
well,
someone got cut. Someone just got arrested and got cut. I don't remember who, but it's incredible the way that the NFL has so many guys, and it is disproportionate to baseball and basketball and whatnot.
Well, the rosters are so large.
The rosters are large, but it's still incredible how much of a rhythm or how much you can rely on or count on the NFL offseason starts, and here come these guys that don't have any structure in their life right now because they're not reporting to their coaches and they're not going into the locker rooms and they're not going into training, into the weight rooms, and left to their own devices. Here we go with a handful of guys that immediately start getting arrested.
And they all have a shitload of money. And they can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
They think they can do whatever they want. And that's what happens, is they just don't live responsibly.
Right. Some of them can do whatever they want, and then some of them discover that they're not big enough to do whatever they want. LaTroy Guyon thought he was big time enough that he could do whatever he wants.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't the case. And
We're sort of in the dark days of sports, in my mind, right now. We don't have... We've got about a month before preseason spring training, with baseball kicks off, and this is about my least favorite month of the year. February is sports wasteland for me. I'm in the gulag of sports right now.
I hear you. I just spent
a little bit of NBA. I watch a little bit of NBA. I watched the Bulls lose last night.
I was watching NBA earlier, watching the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James get back on their horse, and they're going to be right there again by the time the playoffs start. I actually spent an hour earlier today watching MLB Network.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there's anything major to talk about or report about baseball. It was just sort of warming up, just getting myself used to listening to baseball being broken down and talked about, and it was nice. It was nice to listen to them talk about how much of an impact Gordon Beckham might make as the White Sox utility guy as he comes back to Chicago.
And I have to say that is where I like MLB Network versus ESPN or something where it's got to be more broad and national. For all the sports, they got to talk about soccer, I guess, on ESPN. MLB Network really isn't made for non-baseball fans because spend a considerable amount of time breaking down some really, really minute detailed shit on MLB Network. And I do appreciate that because I get into that kind of thing, I think we've talked about this before. We talk about this several times about how non-stats related I am with football, but then you get me into baseball mode and it's the total opposite.
Oh, this guy's OBP and let me tell you, and he's slugging and this, that, and the other.
Yeah. I'm much more detailed with baseball, and that's fantasy driven, of course, but it's fun, and that's sort of the season that I'm now working on now. So this is the official beginning of my baseball fantasy preparation. Even though I've been working on it, now it really gets to start going. Now we're going to have pitchers and catchers report. We're going to start to have spring training. And then I've done box scores. And God love MLB Network because they broadcast a ton of spring training games. And I watch a lot of that, believe it or not. I watch a lot of spring training baseball.
And I'm not going to ask you a bunch of baseball questions here, but the one thing I did want to bring up, because I know we haven't talked about it at all, was how about Max Scherzer going to the Washington Nationals? I think they're going to try to get in the playoffs and win the World Series by giving up exactly one run per nine innings.
That was my Super Bowl. I'm still in football mode. That was my World Series pick last year, was Nationals Angels. And wow, we got Royals Giants. Oh,
look, we've already established that baseball is about the hardest thing to do.
I'm sure the networks would have liked my picks.
Right, much better than Royals Giants.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think LA and Washington in the Super Bowl would have been a little more exciting than San Francisco and Kansas City. But hey, it still was compelling. The Royals came 90 feet away from tying Game 7.
Oh.
Yes.
that reminds me of the tragedy that I discovered when I rehooked my VCR up after 4 months of not using it, because once the World Series was over, I had no use for my VCR anymore. Well, what happened was, I'm sad to report this death or this tragedy. I don't have any sad news music. I should, but so of course I talked about recording Game 7 of the World Series. We may have even been on the air when I did it, because I had to stop the tape and whatnot. I just got the new cable with the DVR around that same time, so I forgot to erase the timer selections to record on the VCR the shows that I usually watch during the week, which I no longer had any use for. And the Game 7 tape was still in the VCR, so I have officially recorded over Game 7 of the World Series.
Are you really sad?
I'm a little frustrated.
Madison Bumgarner pitches his brains out the last four innings of that game.
Oh, I watched it happen. I know that. I just wanted.
So there you go. That's all you need to ever see again.
Well, I still wanted my collection. I still have this humongous collection of videotapes of all the
I
World
know
Series
you do.
And Super Bowls and NBA Finals, and that's
old wrestling and old wrestling tapes.
Oh, tons of old wrestling tapes, but that now that's a hole in my little collection there, and I'm not happy about that.
Oh.
Because I'm OCD.
Maybe you can contact the network and they'll send you a copy.
There are other geeks out there that do things like that tape World Series and all that stuff. So one of these days I'll come across a fellow tape trader or something and I'll fill in the gaps in my collection. There's
Craigslist.
No, I don't ever want to go on Craigslist again. There's a couple of other holes in my collection. The night that Roger Clemens in the Mets-Yankees World Series took the bat that came back at him on the mound and threw it at Mike Piazza.
When he threw a Piazza, yeah. It slipped out of his hand.
Uh-huh.
Slipped.
My cable went out
Roger
that night.
Roger Clemens would never lie.
Yeah, neither would Lance Armstrong, right?
Or Rafael Palmeiro. Ever.
Or Barry Bonds.
Flaxseed oil. Jesus, come on. Get with it.
We're not here to talk about the past.
And I forgot how to speak English, like Sammy Sosa. I've spoken perfect English for the last 15 years, but I'm going to bring an interpreter to my Senate edit. Oh, man. I watched that, too. I watched those hearings on TV.
Wow, I did not watch those hearings. That you got that over me.
It was the dead of winter, and I had nothing else to do. I'm living in Wisconsin in the dead of winter, and I wasn't working, so I watched those.
I see.
And yeah, that was the whole I'm not here to talk about the past and all that garbage. Wow.
So yeah, I've got a few holes in my collection that I'm not happy about, and this was the reason I'm really not happy about, because this was so preventable. All I had to do was either eject the motherfucking tape after it was over, which I thought I did actually, or remember to go in and erase and cancel the recordings on my VCR, which I no longer use to record things because I have a DVR now. But I completely forgot to do that.
So as to your point, the answer to your question is yes, the Nationals are trying to win the World Series by giving up one run per game.
Well, what's that rotation now? It's Scherzer and Jordan Zimmerman, Gio Gonzalez,
yeah.
Steven Strasburg.
Yeah. They've actually
Doug Fister.
They've actually bumped Tanner Roark out of that rotation.
They've got too many other guys.
And Tanner Roark could start everywhere else in the league. What did he win, 13 games last year?
Yeah, he's had very good peripherals his year and a half in the majors so far. They could probably trade him and get a nice haul.
You'd think, I've heard they've been looking at trading Zimmerman, but then why did you get Scherzer?
I don't know.
You know, you don't add that much to your pitching staff to then dump another major piece of your pitching staff. That's not how you load up.
You
pay all that money so that you are completely loaded, because you are going to do a run through the playoffs with that rotation. Unless you're going to trade a guy at the deadline and you've got yourself a nice lead.
Well, I don't know Zimmerman's contract status. I don't know if he's about to be a free agent. So there's that. Or if it's simply someone's offering you a haul of offensive players that are so staggering that you kind of have to do it. There may be somebody out there that wants Jordan Zimmerman so bad that they're willing to give you like a starting outfielder now and their top two prospects in the system or something.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you could be like the Cubs when they traded Samardzija. You get Addison Russell.
Yep.
You get their best prospect. Tanner Roark last year, let's not sell this guy short. He had 15 wins.
Okay.
With a 2.85 ERA.
Not bad.
And that guy's out of the rotation.
Yeah, go to the bullpen, kid. Thanks for what you've done for us, but we don't need you right now. Go do long relief.
Although I do have to say I've never really been that high on Doug Fister. And then I look at his numbers.
He's a very good professional pitcher.
Wow.
Yeah. He's a very good pro.
He does not strike people out. That's what I always remembered him from Seattle. It's just a ground ball. He's just very workmanlike is the way he can always... You know, nothing exciting with Doug Fister.
He's definitely not an exciting pitcher.
But
he gets
people
out.
You look at the numbers, and he gets the guy, he gets a 16-6 last year. He just gets the job done.
He's always just gotten the job done. He's probably as good
out.
As he's.
that's a good job description when you're a pitcher. What do you do for a living?
I get guys out. That's awesome. You're hired. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. So, yeah, that rotation is just ridiculous. I don't know how you can avoid picking them again to go to the World Series or to at least to make it to the NLCS. But, again, it's baseball. It's so unpredictable. Teams are going to be so different in October than they are right now or when the season begins because of injury, because of some minor leaguer gets hot and you call him up and he sticks, some guy flames out and you get rid of him. It's so hard to predict. It really is. But that's kind of what makes it fun, as far as I'm concerned.
For baseball, I mean, yeah, it's a long season.
And teams are
different. Always funny, you know, because we also invested in opening day and we're all excited when our team wins on opening day. It doesn't mean anything.
That's pretty funny too. The first three or four games of the season, and people, what's wrong with the New York Yankees if they start out 1-3 or something? That's always makes me chuckle.
Or for our purposes, like in the fantasy league that we're in, where because it's an auction and we don't do it until about a week after the season starts, and you get that guy who just tears the cover off the baseball for the first week, and he just goes for some ridiculous amount of money, and then it
doesn't do
last.
Anything the rest of the year.
Yes. We call that, I think it was a couple of years ago, we called that pulling a Mike Morse.
Yes.
And
for last season, because I've witnessed it happen live, you could call it pulling a Chris Colabello.
Oh, my
God. That's six RBI in a game
who's
early
now
in
cut.
The season. Yeah.
Who is now cut?
Let's not shortchange him either. He did this for the Twins in the second game of the season last year against the White Sox, which I was there live at White Sox Field, U.S. Cellular Field. So not only is Colabello demoted from the Twins during last season, he went on from there to get sent down to the minors in that same season where he had six RBI in a game. Then traded out of the organization and now cut from that organization that he got traded to.
Yeah.
Which is what, the Blue Jays or the Brewers?
No, it wasn't the Brewers. I think it was the Blue Jays.
Okay. Yeah, so already on his second team since having six RBI in a game less than a year ago and already off that team.
Yeah, it was the Blue Jays, by the way. But yeah, Chris Colabello, though, last year, I think he only went for like $9 or $11 in our league, which was
about $10
more than he should have gone for. That's fine. Mike Morse, the year before, went for like $30. Because I think he hit a home run in four straight games to start the season or something pretty close to that.
Right. But Mike Morse is an established major leaguer who you yourself was even targeting in that draft. So it's not
I liked him for half that price.
Yeah.
Once that started getting above the high teens, I like anybody at the right price. You know me.
Right.
It's like, I got no loyalty. If it's a good enough price, I'll buy the guy, even if I wasn't planning on it. But, yeah, once that started to hit 20, I was like, ooh. And all of a sudden, we all, our little back corner of the room, all of a sudden we're talking about the Mike Morse. You know, we're like, there's some other Mike Morse that we're waiting for that to be a $30 player. But
yep, that was the one.
That's sort of that's the action. That's what drives this for us. You know, that's what makes it so much fun. I'm looking forward to it again this year.
Yep, it's getting ready. James Shields still isn't signed yet. We're waiting for that. Victor Martinez hurts his knee. So he's going to be a risk to not start season, but it's getting to that point. We have to get the baseball news going, and we get ready for that.
Yeah,
now,
we have a period here where it's a little, you know, last year even after this, it's like we quiet it down for a little bit. Take a couple weeks off. I need to get rid of this sore throat. It is just, my wife's yelling at me because I won't go to the doctor. And, I like put up the flashlight and looked into my throat today. I was like, oh my God, but I'm stubborn that way.
I'm right with you. I have a left knee that's been on and off hurting / swollen for, it's going to be going on 2 weeks now. And
I'm the gout. I remember that one.
Oh, yeah. This might be that. I don't know, but I'm stubborn, too. I haven't made a doctor's appointment, but I probably should. This thing goes swollen to hurting, to swollen and hurting, and back and forth, and I'm taking ibuprofen every day and then some Aleve, and then I put ice on it, and I actually had to miss bowling last night because it was so still hurting so bad. It started hurting a couple of weekends ago, but then not last night, but the week before, I came back and bowled because I thought I was getting better, and that was a huge mistake because I was in tremendous pain while I was bowling. I was in such pain that I didn't sit down for the second and third games. I stayed standing the entire time because I didn't want to sit down and let it get stiff on me. So, and now it was still not good enough for me to bowl last night, and then today it was just the swelling was, it felt like my leg was trying to explode. So there's something going on in there. I hope I'm still with you for our next show in a few weeks.
Uh-oh. Well, it's been fun.
If I'm not around, I love you, buddy. I appreciate you, and hope your family is all good, and kiss your babies for me and all that stuff. No, I'm kidding.
Wow. Live on air. Andre says his final goodbyes. I'm going to have to go edit the title of the show. Andre, we hardly knew ye.
So, believe me, I'm with you being stubborn about going to doctors about things like that. I'm going to be limping around again at work tomorrow, and they're going to be looking at me like, really? You're still limping? What the hell's wrong with you? You need to get to a doctor, and they're probably right. But
well, you know, and the trouble for me is I talk for a living, so I know that just sort of exacerbates the problem.
Right.
Because the more I talk, the more raw my throat gets, and the more it hurts, and it's just, you know, hey, it happens.
So that's what we're guys. That's what we do. Hey, it happens. We'll deal with
it.
We'll get over it.
That's right. Put some dirt on it.
That's right. Rub some spit on it and keep going.
That's right. Tell you what, I'm razor blades right now, so I'm all talked out for this show.
All I wanted to do was try to figure out our next show. I'm trying to remember last year. Did we go? I know we took a little break, so we, you know, a couple of weeks, and then did we just go right into the Oscars show with Dave?
Yeah, the Oscars show where neither one of us had seen any of the movies was an interesting show.
It's so awesome that way, though. I think that works for us. That we have Dave on and we go, we haven't seen any of the movies, so go.
Tell us about them. I mean, you know, obviously you can bring up things. I obviously know a lot about older movies, but boy, I don't know anything about new movies. But it was a good show.
Absolutely, we had a good
time. And we always do better in the off season than we do during the football season, anyways.
Right, as far as listenership, so we'll see
if
that holds up as well.
We start picking listeners back up again now that we're not talking about football anymore.
Oh, that football show is through with football. Now I can listen again. All right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll still talk about the draft, and, you know, when we get into, we'll get into some baseball. We'll have our March Madness show, do our brackets.
WrestleMania show coming.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been keeping track of any of that.
That's fine. You're not missing much.
But I don't need to.
Yes, because it's all the same. You can see who's on the show and say, oh, I know what's happening. That guy's getting screwed, and that guy is this and that, and that guy's getting a major push because of how he looks. It's all the same. It never seems to change. In our baseball preview show and all that stuff. So, yeah, we got our off season coming. Looking forward to all of that. But I am celebrating and still exulting over my victory and my Triple Crown and now my right to change the music if I choose. It's not a mandatory thing, but to change the music on the show is the one gambling
We can go back to our Doctor Who theme that we had.
I'm not going back to Doctor Who.
Okay.
That's been
okay.
Made fun of enough by you and my wife and pretty much everyone that listened to it. But
well, I just thought we were doing the sci-fi podcast there for a while. I was okay with that. I could break down some sci-fi for you. We do an hour show on sci-fi, no problem.
I still like the music after the drum kicked in, after the first 10 seconds. The problem was it started slow, so that when that you hear that first 10 seconds, and like you said, it sounded like it was underwater or something.
Yeah.
But I'll do better. The gauntlet has been thrown down, that if I need to pick a new theme song, I need to do a lot better. So I'll try to step up to the challenge of something better and free.
Yeah, free is the key word.
Yeah, key word.
It's our favorite price.
Absolutely. If you have any thoughts or comments on this show, since we have such a listener spike when it's not football, you can always contact us. You can email the show. You would send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. Or you can tweet me at IMLDDre, or you can tweet Jason at IMLDJTG. He loves it when you tweet him, I'm sure. Our blog site, of course, is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. It's where all our picks are always up. And, of course, our live show page, blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. And I believe there's some sort of subscription button there that you can push that will I think gives you an update or lets you know when I do schedule our next show. It'll give you an indication of when that's going to be. But sometime before the Oscars come, we'll be doing an Oscar preview show with Dave. That should be our next show unless some big sports news comes about that we decide that we need to do a show about that. But we'll see.
Well, and that's the fun thing with this format is that, you know, we can, hey, something cool, you know, hey, we need to do a show, we got to talk about something. And that happened a couple of times last year.
Yeah, I believe our show after our Super Bowl recap, the first show was actually talking about the Richie Incognito bullying and the Michael Sam coming out before the draft thing. And that was big enough that we thought we should do a show about that. So, you know, major news like that, we'll find time to get on and talk a little sports.
Or talk whatever.
Yeah, or talk whatever.
Yeah. Open mouth, say shit.
That's right. So the off season is upon us. The football season is finally in the books. And boy, I tell you, I should have lost this season again. I admit it. I know it. There's no reason for Seattle to have not run that ball at that situation. It's going to haunt Pete Carroll the rest of his days, and I'm just glad I didn't pick the Seahawks, I guess.
If you had had the Seahawks and I would have been forced to take the Patriots and then that would have gone against you, if, considering you were in the lead, that you had the pick to make, wow. This would not have been this would have been a rough show for you.
Yes, it would have. A lot of cursing, a lot of spitting, a lot of
would have been a whole rough off season. I mean, just to carry that. See, for me it's okay cuz you were in the lead. You made the right pick. I had to hitch my wagon to whoever you didn't have, and I was okay with that. And I've won in that situation before, and we both have.
Right.
It's happened to both of us where one of us has screwed up the Super Bowl pick, and the other one's benefited from it. And, you know, it happens. But, hey, you earned it. You won. You had the lead going into the playoffs. You almost pissed the whole thing away, but you hung on in the end. That's what counts. Just like the New England Patriots.
That's right.
You almost just gave it all away, and you still came through.
It also would have been okay for you because you don't have a raging ego that I have. You don't have the need to be fed your massive ego. You don't need to put value on this as something important. If you have something huge writing on it, I'm the one that has my value go up and down depending on if I win the picks title every year. So that's me. But in any event.
Well, it was a good bounce back season from you, considering you didn't even make it to the Super Bowl last year. See?
Yes,
and I'm always going to be there just to jab that knife in a little bit, too. See, that's the thing, is you get to build yourself up, and then I'll just come in and just like cut you right off at the knees.
That's Jay. That's my best friend, always pissing in my cornflakes. I'm Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Our next show will probably be at least a couple of weeks from now, but either way, keep up with us on our live show page, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you later.